You might go there to work, but look at the opportunity you have to make new connections, take in new diets, take in a healthier lifestyle, walk more, and then visualizing a healthier future, because you do have more ownership and control over your health than you've ever known.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Welcome to the New Nomad Podcast, hosted by Alan and Andrew of Insured Nomads. Join us as Alan and Andrew interview and explore the community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Tune in to incredible discussions with thought leaders each week that will help you take full advantage of the cross-border remote work lifestyle. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to another episode of the New Nomad Podcast, the podcast that protects you, the traveler, the person who wants to visit new places, the remote worker, the location-independent individual. And today we have Dr. Deborah Smith with us. Long experience helping and supporting people, not only crossing borders and travel, but also engaging in something that I think is really interesting, which we're going to get into, kind of having information that goes out, and I'm not sure if we're going to call them microbursts, but we'll get into it, or micro recordings, whatever that helps people have a greater understanding of health. In my conversations with Dr. Smith, I've learned a lot, so I was hoping today she would join us and share with our audience also. So Dr. Smith, welcome to the New Nomad. You've had a long and industrious career, and you've supported many people. And to many of our listeners out there, they're moving overseas for the first time. That's some folks. And then we have the other spectrum. They've been to 70, 80, 90 countries. But still, at the end of the day, staying healthy is job one before everything else. So maybe a little bit of your background. We'll get into some of the conversations and tips that we can share with our audience.
Well, thank you, Alan. I really appreciate that introduction. And yes, I've had a very long and storied history in healthcare. I actually started as an internal medicine specialist, trying to do primary and consultative care, had a Medicare practice. It wasn't really financially viable, went into teaching internal medicine, and eventually got into the occupational aerospace industry, managing healthcare as a senior manager of health services for 22 years. And so as part of that, we had business travelers, and we also had something known as expats and international local hires. And so we had these populations that would have unique needs. And so I wasn't the direct travel physician, but I managed the department, covered for them, interacted with our global medical assistance company. And so there's some basic concepts and tenets I learned as part of that. I actually left the corporation after a long and storied career, as you mentioned, and chose to become board certified in lifestyle medicine. Lifestyle medicine is something fairly new. Most people have not heard of it. And so in addition to the occupational aerospace medical experience, the internal medicine experience, added the lifestyle medicine, which is basically coaching and guiding individuals to actually take ownership and control their health and reverse even longstanding disease. And over 85% of all chronic disease is lifestyle related. And we have much more ownership over our health than we ever knew. We get into things like epigenetics, microbiome, things that can be impacted by travel, but we also can impact it by lifestyle, no matter where we are, no matter what sort of situations we're facing. And so that's the challenge today, is how to bring that knowledge to individuals who want to either relocate within the country they currently live in, maybe in a more rural area where they're outside of their typical healthcare system, or even going across borders into more advantageous locations that are set up for the digital nomad. And so I appreciate the introduction, and I look forward to our discussion today.
Well, and I'll throw one out there right about lifestyle right off the bat. So many years back, I traveled to an Eastern Bloc country and met an American who had been deployed there. And I asked just a simple question: what's the biggest difference between being here and then when you're in the United States? And the answer came back to me, something that was health related, that is back to your lifestyle comment. said, you know what the biggest difference is? When I was in the United States, I had Crohn's disease and I was always having issues. And now since I've moved to this country where if you buy a loaf of bread, it gets moldy in 4 days and there's more natural foods, I have not had any issues at all. And maybe I'll throw it back at you as lifestyle. It really came back to me loud and clear that what you eat, how you sleep, I mean, many of the different things really affect that. So I would love some of your tips and ideas on some of the, maybe the simpler lifestyle changes that folks may make, but is anything really simple? But I'd love your comment on that.
It can be. We tend to overcomplicate wellness. There's many, many reasons for that. I've spent several years studying why people don't do what we know we need to do. And there's really 9 points of friction. I'm not going to get into that right now, but getting into specifically Crohn's is a piece of inflammatory bowel disease. Crohn's, you can resolve just by getting off of animal products and meat. In a third of the individuals, you can completely reverse Crohn's by pursuing more of a vegan, vegetarian lifestyle. Inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis is another type that seems to be more predicated by the use of cow's milk and dairy, is that the quality and components of many foods, if you compare the European Union version versus the American version, you're going to see a lot more high fructose corn syrup, a lot more preservatives, something we call food-like substances, but they impair our microbiome. Our microbiome are the 100 trillion bacteria, viruses, fungi, protozoa, but mostly bacteria that we need to actually live. We didn't used to think that we needed bacteria in our gut, but our bacteria in our gut synthesize a lot of the vitamins that we need. They synthesize tens of thousands of beneficial compounds, short-chain fatty acids like butyric acid. They form nitric oxide, which is short-lived and we need for good vascular health. And so we need to have a relationship with our world, the world within us, the world outside of us. And so when we eat foods that are highly processed, typical American eats two-thirds of their diet, highly processed food. Typically, that food is full of sugars, fats, not healthy fats, usually corn oil, food oils that are high in omega-6s, and you've got to have a normal balance between your essential fatty acids, omega-3, omega-6s. And so we get into this inflamed state, particularly with the Western diet, particularly with the American diet. And so one of the things I joke about is, well, if you just move overseas, first of all, that's going to give you a different dietary intake. So that's going to help make your microbiome better. Many countries actually have better diets. There are some countries where, like in India, you do want to avoid a lot of intake of ghee, which is clarified butter, but they use spices. They use turmeric, one of the best antioxidants, anti-cancer properties known. Green tea, they tend to have more teas and coffee. Coffee and tea, just drink that. You're going to live 10 years longer on average. In fact, the Harvard guys are telling me drink up to 4 cups a day. I'm not sure I can do that without being wired off the wall, but I'm up to 2 to 3 cups a day. And the thing is that with a good grade of coffee, there's so much phytonutrients and antioxidants. Yeah, they call coffee the complex blend of phytonutrients and antioxidants. You just got to be drinking the stuff. Or green tea, passion fruit, saffron. Doesn't matter the type of plant compound generally. It just matters that you brew it and drink it cold, hot, doesn't matter. Just don't put sugar and dairy in your drinks. And so much of our sugar load comes from drinks. And I want to get back to the ulcerative colitis and Crohn's.
Sure, just by, sure.
If you have a devastating disease like that, you're moving to a new country, why not radically change your diet? That's one of the things that you can do to radically change your health. Taking ownership over your health, bringing in meditation, mindfulness, making sure that you stay connected. That's harder to do when you're a traveler. It's not so hard to find a fellow American expat on a corner in Paris, but it's very, very difficult for people coming to the U.S. to find a fellow Frenchman on the corner of Topeka, Kansas. And so being connected with a community, a tribe, having your tribe can be digital nomads. It can be travelers and just making sure that you're connected. And then, sleep so often gets interrupted. Travel can have a huge impact on that. There's some things that you can do to help keep that on track. But if you're in a new location, why not experience the full sensory flavors of the local food? foods. Get variety. One of the things, best things we can do for our health is just eating a variety of minimally processed whole foods and getting away from the milk and dairy, particularly here in the States. But almost anywhere, you want to minimize butter, dairy, milk. And there's so many good substitutes now with the oat milks and the nut milks. And so, again, you want to make sure you're not getting something that's overly full of sugar, that's overly processed. But we can have a whole 1 hour discussion on just what's wrong with cow's milk and why it's probably not good for your health. And if you want to go down that buddy hole, Alan, I'm happy to go with you.
I think the important thing is, no, and I agree with you. I've actually moved to oat milk recently and I feel much better. And my whole family has moved to a different type of milk. But also what you bring up is something I think we want to explore is, so you've talked about like widening your horizons on different foods and spices. And I agree with you on turmeric and other things, but also widening your thoughts perhaps on your healthcare options. Like for instance, I remember in Global, people used to laugh at, oh, well, they're getting a doula, or they would laugh that, well, there in Germany, you can go to the spa. And of course, you know, if somebody has cancer in the United States where we rush you right back to work, is that really the best way for you to get healthy? Where in some other countries, you get cancer, you have a longer period to recuperate, even when you're done with treatment. So I would love your commentary on that too, as we go down this path of difference between the United States and others, because a lot of people in this podcast are like, yeah, I want to go experience something different. But you've not only touched upon the aspects of food and wellness, but I'd also like you to touch a bit on health.
Absolutely. And as we've looked at American healthcare system, we're seeing more and more movement to what's typically called holistic, integrative, alternative. If you look at my board certification in lifestyle medicine, that's an accepted, approved medical specialty where physicians with a traditional background or other healthcare providers are given the tools to basically move people more towards whole foods, you know, more water, daily movement, not necessarily sweaty exercise, better quality of sleep, and blue lights and digital screens are a huge problem with our pineal gland that makes the melatonin, becoming more mindful, just having little micro breaks throughout the day and having more micro moments of awareness where you make better food choices, being more connected to a community, a tribe, your peer group, just being socially, and with a pandemic going on, we've all experienced this disconnection, and it's one of the things that we so need. And then just avoiding any unnecessary health risks. And so giving up smoking, cutting back on alcohol. A lot of travelers get into trouble if they drink and they're tired. And gee, everyone drives on the wrong side of the road. They're coming from the wrong directions. So you want to be really careful if you're traveling and getting into a lot of alcohol. And some cultures actually kind of push you into that. And so we just want to be cognizant of that. And one of the best things that you can do before you travel for any length of time or go out of the country is to get some sort of a global medical assistance product. And there's multiple providers. They're all good at what they do. And you just want to have someone that can review your medications before you go. Some medications are not legal in other countries. They will get you arrested or in trouble. Be careful with your CBD or, God forbid, medical marijuana. We've seen what happens with countries with that. You also need to understand the healthcare system where you're going. Is it public? Is the public system safe? Some countries have free healthcare, but your desired hospital is going to be the expat or private pay hospital. Many countries require you to have guarantees of payment before they will treat you. The U.S. will treat you, but then bankrupt you. But other countries require you to pay up front. Do you have a credit card? Is it good? Can you pay in the local currency? And so these are all sorts of things that your global medical assistance company can help with. Give you a travel advisory before you go into country. Is the water safe? Is what foods should you be careful about? Street vendors can be a salsa can be yes. A source of problem. Yes. You know, raw or foods that are washed but using dirty water, and then kind of they sit and stew for a while. So there are certain things that you want to know before you go into country. There are certain things you need to know once you're in country. If you get into trouble, can I trust the EMS? Is EMS going to take me to a specific hospital? Is the EMS run by the hospital system? In certain locations, Bangalore comes to mind, you don't want to wait on the ambulance. You self-transport if you can. And so knowing the emergency numbers, having someone that can tell you you're in a good care place, or no, you need to be transferred to a secondary hospital, a standard of care, a reference hospital. There's a name I'm not thinking of, but you know, a higher level of care where you can get the care that you need. And oftentimes there's a lot of countries, there may not be rabies vaccine in that country. You may have to be evacuated. So don't play with dogs or cats or animals. I know we love to do it. Be careful with risky activities. You know, riding the motor scooter in Rome was fun. I did it with my driver, said, do you want me to bring the scooter tomorrow? And I said, absolutely. Not what my company wanted me doing. It was the best time of my life. Yes. Closest to death I've ever come and lived. Yeah. So, you know, there's things that we do, but there's ways to safeguard yourself. And actually, if you've got a chance to eat the local cuisine, it's safe, it's whole, it's clean food, it's made holistically, it's grown locally, I would be more likely. I mean, I was drinking the water in Rome out of the Roman taps because it was good quality water and I was hot and thirsty. And why, you know, I don't want to be buying bottled drinks with sugar in it. And so there's things that you can do that are going to make your experience safer, better, healthier. There's a capability that you need to have in your back pocket. You get into trouble and have to be evac'd to another location. You don't always control what happens to you. Be careful with taxis. Pick higher grade of taxis. Make sure they have a seatbelt. A lot of injuries occur in countries where there's really very high injury rates. Middle East comes to mind, where the traffic safety is, and there are certain countries where EMS is just not going to show up necessarily. So, you know, be wearing the seatbelts, pick the back seat. Don't pick a hobby of driving a Trabant and getting into accidents with a Trabant or a Yugo. There's clubs that do that. They love their Trabants, but they're not terribly hardy vehicles. And so if you are going to take risks, make sure you've got the global medical assistance. And I'm not giving you an intentional plug, but it's such a key point of having a capability. And then, you know, how do you radically change your health? Well, you make small changes over time. And so maybe you get rid of the dairy, because dairy doesn't build strong bones and teeth. It actually breaks down because it's acidic. And countries that do a lot of high dairy have the worst bone health. And so, you know, bring in small changes. You don't have to use white refined pasta. Bring in pasta made from chickpea, which is great. It's what's in hummus. Or you get red lentil-based pasta. Tastes just like spaghetti. Or get veggie-based spaghetti. Or get zucchini-based spaghetti, and still have your spaghetti, but do it in a little more healthy way. And so there's little changes that you can make. Get to be a tea drinker. I drink a lot of tea. I drink my 2 cups of coffee. I look forward to my 2 cups of coffee every morning, and maybe a cup early afternoon, just because, hey, everything I hear year after year after year, we used to think coffee was bad for us. Coffee, cigarettes, eggs, bacon. Well, the eggs and bacon I can make a good case for, and we know the cigarettes are, but the coffee isn't. It's actually, if you are at least a normal metabolizer of caffeine, and you buy a better grade of coffee, it's actually very beneficial. 10 years longer life on average. And don't get me started on teas, particularly green tea or plant-based teas, saffron, probably better than amantadine for dementia. It's important to be up on our B vitamins. One of the things that travelers maybe don't realize is how important vitamin D is, having a normal. It is a pro-hormone. It's really not even a vitamin. It's a pro-hormone. It regulates a lot of responses and activities in the body. And so we've highly underappreciated the indoor environment and how much vitamin D that we need. And I can tell you, all the lifestyle docs and all the New York docs, the first thing they started taking with COVID came around, vitamin D. Twice as likely to get COVID, more likely to get severe COVID if you're low on vitamin D. They all doubled up, tripled up on their vitamin D levels. I worked a COVID hotline for a year and a half. And one of the things I'd ask people, you know, you don't sound very sick. Oh, no, I feel great. What are you doing? What do you do? How active are you? Oh, I'm outdoors all the time. Or some people would tell me, oh, my wife's got me on 20,000 units of vitamin D. And I'm going, oh, well, you know, that's a high dose. You may want to cut that back over time. I'm not your medical doctor, but, you know, whatever's working for you. And yeah, a lot of docs will just double up on their vitamin D. Right now, the dose is usually 4,000 to 5,000 international units a day of a supplement. And having a little bit of vitamin K2 on board, some magnesium is important. And that's where food synergy comes in, where you're not just taking everything in the form of a pill. Taking a multivitamin every day, you don't live as long. But if you eat a whole food diet and then supplement the nutrients that you may be deficient in, vitamin D comes to mind. A lot of the B vitamins, B12 specifically if you're vegan, you've got to just supplement it because we're not drinking, you know, natural water that has bacteria in it that's making the B12 that we need. And we're not outdoors enough to have our skin make enough vitamin D. Plus, if you're north of the 37th latitude, which is about top of Oklahoma, top of Texas, kind of that area, you're not going to get enough year-round sun. And you still got to go out midday, skin exposed. You know, people are always worried about skin cancer. Well, that's because we got way too much sun when we're young and we got sunburns versus just a small daily dose every day where we had to go out and find food, forage, you know, get water. I mean, we were programmed to be in nature at least on a daily basis. And so if you're traveling, your ability to get outdoors, to enjoy the sun and to connect with nature, you can do meditation in an airport. It's an interesting experience. You can meditate anywhere just by having a small micro moment of awareness where you're going to say, okay, I'm feeling a little stressed. Take a deep breath, long expiration phase. That first tells the body, it's okay. I'm not going to die. There's not a saber-toothed tiger coming at me. Maybe at an airport, it may be my flight's delayed. Deep breath. And then just start looking at the environment without judgment. That's how you meditate with your eyes open. I go for walks. I look at nature. I listen to the sounds. That's my daily meditation. If you're traveling, you can observe things that you would never notice. I won't get into the skin cells floating through the air in most U.S. airports, but just the interactions of people, how they treat each other, kindness, when there is kindness going on, families traveling together, you just absorb it. Yeah, you absorb it. And if you're kind to other people in a setting where no one's being kind, that's where you get the free upgrades. That's where they bring you the second bottle of hooch. That's where they, you know, they're kind to you because nobody's kind in an airplane anymore. I mean, we're all just, you know, wigged out by the experience, even though look at the magic of flight. You're doing something that people only could have dreamed about 100, 200 years ago.
George Carlin had a great comedic routine that he said that if somebody 200 years ago had said you were sitting in a chair flying in a metal tube through the air, they would have called you a god. Yet, you know, we have, you know, we complain that it comes to mind about kindness too. And let's talk a little bit about karma. I've been very lucky to be able to travel to Cambodia and some other places. And you just feel differently maybe about the karma. And actually, we have a mutual friend, our friend Dave, you know, when we've worked out in the Tabitha Foundation and have gone to Cambodia, and you just, people take a deep breath there. They assume positive intent. I feel a difference in there. And I'd love your commentary on not only the mental differences when you travel, but also the physical. I mean, when I travel and I wear my Fitbit, I find myself walking 20,000 steps a day, and I don't feel like I worked really hard because there's so much to observe. And I know walking is good for you, but I would love your kind of mental health and physical health checklists when you're traveling. Are you a believer in the 10,000 steps? Because I think the medical seems to show that 7,500, but whatever you do is good. Just do something.
I think walking is highly underrated. Most of the benefit happens around 75, but you do get incremental benefit, 10, 12, 15,000. Problem is finding the time to do it. A lot of locations are going to require you to do stairs. New York City requires a lot of stairs. Paris, Rome. I mean, there's lots of stairs everywhere. And so being able to do the activity that you need to do to travel. One of the things about travel is experiencing the other cultures, experiencing, meeting new people. That means you've got to be open to connecting with others, which means that you're willing to engage with others and be kind, smile, make eye contact, ask them questions. One of the most powerful tools for connecting with somebody is asking questions. You know, what you doing? You know, what's your past been like? What's your future? Where are you going? What's working for you? What's not working for you? I mean, there's a simple questions you ask. You get them talking. You connect with them on an emotional level. That's really what social connection is all about. And being socially connected is the strongest determinant for a long lifespan. They did a study looking at Harvard graduates, I think starting 70 years ago or more, and they followed all of them. And the strongest determinant for a long lifespan was how socially connected you were. And so the chance to travel, oftentimes we're intimidated by the language, the customs, we're, you know, not sure what to say. Are we going to offend people? Little acts of kindness and just, you know, for the English, American English speaking traveler, we have the benefit of there's a lot of areas and people who can speak at least some rudimentary English, even if you don't know the local language or know some of the basic words. And so just engaging with people, Uber, a taxi, great way to engage with people. Hotels, when you're waiting for somebody, waiting in line, going to the store.
When I go overseas, now I don't have a lot of hair, but I let my hair grow out and I get a haircut locally. I've had haircuts in Jordan and Ukraine and, you know, many other places. And they're first surprised to see an American getting a haircut, but you try to interact. I know some of it's pantomime, but it ties back to some of the lessons you have. And it kind of brings up a question I wanted to talk to you about. You're building a program of micro lessons. Uh-huh. And here we are on this podcast. I'm getting multiple micro lessons as you and I talk, because I love many of your thoughts. Please share with our audience. And of course, we'll have this in the show notes. And we'll have more information where you can stay in touch with Dr. Smith near the end of the podcast. But talk a little bit about your thought of micro lessons, because you've learned a lot and you're trying to share this and help others remain safer, happier, more productive. And your epiphany of sharing some of this and your plans in the next couple of years, which I think will be marvelous as those of us listen to this podcast and continue to learn.
Well, I think we all need to have more of what I call a micro moments mindset, where we are more reflective of the past, less likely to be angry with ourselves or choices. We've all done bad things. We've all done stupid things. The world has always not been kind to anyone. And so reflecting on what I've learned, how I've grown, savoring the current moment, having the right backup and information to really savor that new environment. You might go there to work, but look at the opportunity you have to make new connections, take in new diets, take in a healthier lifestyle, walk more, and then visualizing a healthier future, because you do have more ownership and control over your health than you've ever known. Because, you know, universal laws work both ways. If you can make yourself unhealthier, there's just an equal mechanism known as salutogenesis that can take you back to health. And we've just never focused on that. And so the whole micro-learning thing is moving into everyone's pressured for time. We're turning more and more to electronic devices to look up something quickly, how to, you know, connect better, how to navigate the trains in Rome, which are a unique thing because they are a little bit unique. And so people are turning to these, what I call, and actually I didn't make this term up, I've just taken it from others, in the flow learning, where you quickly look up a reference, you look at it, you learn from it, and you move on. And so I've tried to take this whole lifestyle medicine thing about, you know, chicken's bad for you. Why? Glycotoxins are bad. What's a glycotoxin? What's an oxidized cholesterol? Why do you not want to put animal products in a microwave or eat ghee or tuna fish out of a can? There's our scientific reasons for that. There's just so many studies coming out every day, 100, 200 studies a day just on Alzheimer's. I mean, it's just overwhelming. So what you want to do is learn the fundamentals. And so I'm trying to build a program that uses, you know, maybe you just wake up and you just watch a short little 30-second musical intro to the day that gives you a daily health lesson. And so I'm trying to do more of in the flow learning that are called micro lessons, because nobody takes time to read a thick book. Textbooks are out. And traditional learning is kind of moving more towards, what do I need to know now to be a better human, better person, better at my job? And that's where using guides and coaches and mentors and really looking at life differently. It's not intensive study, then go do. It's really, what can I learn today? What can I learn from you, Alan? What can you learn from me? What can we learn from each other? And do it in a 30-minute podcast that you can do while you're working out, while you're driving to work. I mean, this is really what technology enables. It also enables us to spend all of our time on social media news, which just stimulates our amygdala, makes us angry, gets us alert and on edge, and it makes us depressed. And so just don't do it. Instead of spending your time on TikTok in the morning or Facebook, go out and connect with somebody at the local coffee shop. Get somebody to walk with.
Take the dogs for a walk.
Sit in nature.
See the beautiful outdoors. Absolutely. Exactly. You know, something you can look at. So a quick question for you, because you've let us down so many paths. We ask our guests.
I tend to do that. That's
every time they join us. And it's excellent. That makes for a great discussion. For our folks, the question that we've gotten some great response from people on is, please share maybe an overlooked person, place, or experience that you've discovered that you would like our audience to discover. Now, you've given us some discoveries in the health area, but any other unique place, person, whatever, book that you think would be of great value to our listening
audience? Actually, I've touched on a lot of the things that I normally would save for the spot. I think one of the things I would focus on is that you see a lot more manual therapies being offered to people, massage-based or manual therapies for musculoskeletal pain. And so what I've learned in my time in U.S. healthcare, in my time running an industrial rehab program for a major global manufacturer, is there's so many things that if we could just have somebody move the fascia around to remodel it. I've studied sports chiropractic. I've studied fascial distortion model, lots of other models. And basically, if you're in pain, that's the body telling you, hey, take notice. But it doesn't mean it's always going to be there. And be willing, not necessarily to try stuff that where they inject anything or you take supplements or pills, but be more open to more holistic, the power of touch, the power of massage, physiotherapy. People don't get PT enough in this country. So if you're having an issue like that, investigate what may be possible. And there are some technologies or yoga. Tai Chi is one of the best things you can do for balance. And muscle strengthening is your key to longevity, health span, not just living longer, but living healthier for longer. That's something known as health span. And so get into a group where you do a little Tai Chi with somebody once a day during your lunch break, or go for a walk. That forces you to balance. It forces you to navigate uneven terrain. We highly underappreciate the value of friendships and time spent in nature and time spent with safe animals. Don't go pick up wild animals in China or places where there's no, but you know, connecting with nature in a way that's safe and rational, it can be very therapeutic for your health. And keep in mind that you do have, even 20 years of type 2 diabetes can be reversed. We didn't used to believe that. You can reverse macular degeneration, glaucoma. Gee, that's eyes don't regenerate, but you can prevent them because they're microvascular diseases, or diabetes type 3, type 4, Alzheimer's becoming a big concern, at least here in the Western countries. And so just little things, small actions consistently done over time have huge impacts on your health. I call it the magnification of time, the lens effect, the butterfly effect. Little things add up. And not only compound, but they exponentially grow into better health. And you may not notice it at first. Be patient. Be consistent. Do the stuff that intuitively feels right for you. You know, being a vegan isn't necessarily right for everybody. But don't be, you know, all your protein via animal products. Don't be a big dairy person. It's carcinogenic. It's saturated fat bomb. It's got all kinds of contaminants. At least here in the States. Would I be open to eating some yogurt or something in Europe? Absolutely. I still do yogurt as part of my diet. Goat's milk in other countries might be perfectly fine on occasion, but, you know, a big cup of American, and I would get in trouble for saying it, but, you know, there's milk is not the healthy food that we thought it was growing up. Neither is butter.
Well, we keep learning new things, and I know our listening audience will want to continue to learn more from you. And one of the things also we want to share with the audience, as more of the micro learnings come out from Dr. Smith, we will do our best to make sure that our audience has access and gets to know what you're working on. But where can people find you? People will get really engaged with this conversation. I know you're on LinkedIn. Would you share where they can find you on LinkedIn?
Yeah, and absolutely.
Create a bit of community of your own? I think it's
it's actually
just the typical
www.linkedin.com, which is standard for everybody, then the /IN, that gets you into LinkedIn. And then it's just Deborah-Smith-ND. Yeah, we'll get you there. I'll have the link. I'll send you the link. Stay connected with me there. You can certainly send me questions. If you have questions related to this podcast, I'll try to respond personally to all of them. I will not give you medical advice because I'm not licensed in every jurisdiction that you're probably in, but I can give you health and well-being advice based on the 6 pillars of lifestyle medicine. The key to life is balance, savor the moment, and reflect on the past and visualize. Have something that's compelling, that's pulling you forward. You're going to have a full and meaningful life.
That's great. Well, I'll mention this to our audience. One of the reasons why I'm really excited to have Dr. Smith on this is we had a conversation ourselves a couple of weeks back, and I left there thinking this is just really important things, and also about, you know, culture, but also community. And one of the things, I'm in a very strong tennis community, and I saw a write-up recently that people who play tennis have the longest life expectancy of every sport, and they were trying to figure it out. And a lot of it had to do with a couple things, which is typically you play with partners as you get older, so it's doubles, or there's a social aspect to it. I know there's a socioeconomic aspect of it too, but I felt it was more of the camaraderie and maybe the mini sprints that I watch people who are 90 years old play tennis. Mm-hmm. Right? The mini sprints, interval training, correct?
It's high intensity interval training. It's the whole concept of stressing hard and then relaxing. You're not sprinting the entire time you're playing tennis. There's down periods, and it's a short, you know, it's not a game that lasts for hours and hours and hours. And so there's high intensity intervals. It's a social game. There's times that you're gunning and running. Handball would do the same. Certain other sports can do the same. And so having that little bit of high intensity interval training, no matter how you do it, is hugely beneficial for building. And then you got to build and then restore. It's not just build, because that's stress. You're just adding stress to the body. So it's charge, build up, get stronger, but have that relaxation and rest period built in. And doing it's the yin and yang of life. And that's really how the best form of fitness works, is you build up. You don't do weight training every day a week. You do it two or three times a week, and you let the muscle recover. And that charge, breakdown, recovery is kind of the magic. And so tennis is a game that requires facilities. It's a little bit higher affluence. You start getting into the social determinants of health. But yeah, just find something that you do with others, because it's going to make you do it.
That's fantastic. So to our audience, thank you for joining us today. We had a really engaging conversation. Once again, the way people find about great content is by word of mouth. Please pass this along to others. We'd love to have a wider audience for the new Nomad. We appreciate all of you who are intellectually curious and traveling abroad. And we'll make sure in the show notes, we have interesting information on Dr. Smith in the future. So with that, please travel well, and we wish you all the best.
Insured Nomads proudly supports the New Nomad podcast. Insured Nomads, for the evolution of insurance, for the revolution of travel. For all your travel, medical, and support needs, please visit our website at insurednomads.com. We support our location-independent community worldwide.
Thanks for tuning in to the New Nomad podcast, where we bring together an incredible community of people and ideas that embody the nomadic spirit. Please remember to subscribe and leave a review. For more amazing tips to help you take advantage of the cross-border lifestyle, please visit us at insurednomads.com/podcast. See you next week.